All right, we are plugged in and ready to rock and roll. You're listening to the Crass Files podcast with Adam, and it's Sunday night, the 24th of July, here in Sydney, Australia. Northern Beaches, Sydney, Australia. I am here, and joining me for a chat tonight is Jay Wilderness. Great to have Jay on the podcast again, as always, and we're going to chat about Jay's work and videos and everything that he is up to and center around his work as well, as we always do. And there's always so much to cover, that is for sure. It's unbelievable times, folks, as we move forward into 2022. Incredible. Everything's up on my website, crassfiles.com. Enjoy, email me anytime about anything. Thanks to the members, you guys are awesome. I just can't keep that website up without you. You guys are great. You can support me over there through a membership if you would like. It's all on the website. And so much, so many podcasts and articles and things going up. All our social media, like Telegram and stuff, and Brighteon and BitChute, everything's attached to the website now. So you can check out those channels and just keep supporting and keep learning and sharing information as we move forward here. There's always, as I said, a lot to cover. Jay was on with us on the last show. He was pretty much just about to move on that weekend, and he's made that move, and now we are connecting, and he's moved. He's there, and he's on the ground, and it's all happened. How are you going, buddy? And catch us up with how the move was, and your how's it all going in this area? How's the how has this all been received?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Adam. Really appreciate it. I'm up here in the wilderness of Wales right now. It's been week two, I think I'm in now. So it's been a whirlwind experience, to be honest. Like moving maybe 4.5 hours away from my original location on the south coast. It's been stressful and all that stuff. And I think the first week I was pretty kind of anxious, to be honest. You know, it's just like unsettled and stuff. But in the last week, everything's kind of come together, and I feel pretty settled and just trying to embrace the new surroundings. You know, it's completely different. It's if I forget a carton of milk at the supermarket, that's a big problem, because I've got 30-minute drive to
you
go back
get supplies.
So you know, there's new things to think about and things to get used to. But you know, as I've essentially been a city boy, I think, for the last sort of 20 years of my life, at least. So it's a big adjustment, but I already knew that. And I think that's where the anxiousness was initially, was, you know, just readjusting and trying to battle away those thoughts of like, what the hell am I doing? You know, because there's something to be said for, you know, relative comfort and convenience of city life, but you know, just keep needing to remind myself of the reason.
It's a big psychological thing, isn't it? You know, moving out of your place where all your stuff is and you're accustomed to and comfortable, and you've got to pack up everything and just leave, and you're kind of going into the unknown and you're not sure about what's going to happen there. So as long as that has fit nicely,
sure,
and you know, you feel sort of like you're more at home each day is a good thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The good thing that happened last week was kind of meeting some of the local people, because I'm in an area where there's maybe 20 households max. So it's like a small hamlet, it's called. And I've met everyone who's living close to me now. And they're all really good people, you know, positive outlook. And funnily enough, I had a conversation with my neighbor yesterday, and he uttered the words New World Order, and my ears naturally pricked up to discover that he's also quite sort of active online and has a, you know, a bit of a community going, and, you know, like-minded people. So I have discovered that literally everyone who lives close to me has been very opposed to what's been going on for the last 2 years. So that was incredibly pleasing, because it's not so much, you know, getting together with these people to chat about conspiracies. It's just being in an area where you know that you've got people who are going to back you up if and when things hit the fan, you know. So that was one of the most pleasing things to have occurred, actually, just knowing that, you know, that I can I can be pretty open with these people, and you know they're not going to be falling for any more nonsense. So that's good.
That's a nice. So. I was just discussing this on one of my podcasts the other week. Just being out at a big mall the other week, I had to get some connectors and cables and things, a couple of plug-in things, you know, little gadgets, little bits and pieces. And I was at this big mall, and I was just thinking that, you know, everybody was just moving so fast. Everybody was so buried in their phones. I was just thinking to myself, you know, I'm married, but I was thinking it'd be so hard for a single guy to even strike up a conversation with a girl now. They're just, you got to get through this whole force field and their phones. Everybody seems on edge. It's like, I was covering this a bit. It's like in Australia, people are worried about that they're going to lock us down again. So they're trying to rush and do things as quickly as possible and get everything done just in case that happens again. So they're living their lives in fast forward. And I just got that feeling that no one really cares in a, you know, a bigger urban sort of around cities and stuff. I don't mean that with everyone. I'm just saying, like, I feel like it would be nice to go back to that small sort of community feeling where, you know, you have people around you that know you and that that understand and that you can connect with, who are on the same wavelength, and that you can have conversations with. And if something happens to you, they got your back. You know, that kind of small town sort of thing. You know, people say, oh, I wouldn't want that because everyone knows your business and they know what you're doing all the time. And I understand that. But it's also a nice thing to have that small town feel where everyone's got each other's backs, because when you live in big urban and city environments, everyone's just rushing around and flashing past you, and you feel like I could drop down, burst into flames now, and people would just be walking over the top of you. You know what I mean? And I feel like that must be a nice thing too, to kind of slow down, to rewind and reconnect with that kind of community. And then also to plug into somewhere like you have and make that move, but then, you know, meet people straight away or shortly after that are kind of on board and hear them talking and say, wow, that guy just said this and that. And then make that connection. It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing. And now you've got people around that are, you know, on our wavelength and interested in what we're all doing and interconnected. And that's a nice thing as well, rather than being in a big city environment where everyone's just going every which way and you can't make connections with people. It's really tough to work out, you know.
I'm in that position. I'm single and have been for a couple of years, and it's like that's exactly the reason, really, as far as I can see. Is, you know, you struggle to find someone who is capable of looking away from their phone long enough to have a conversation.
And you've got to get through the mask.
That's a real struggle. exactly. It's a real struggle. So, but like you say, up in this environment, people have got skills as well, you know, and I'm feeling a little bit inferior on that level, having moved up here, because everyone's kind of, you know, their experience with like building stuff, and, you know, they've got a decent amount of land, so they're expanding and doing stuff and gardening and just generally being more self-sufficient, which is obviously why I moved up here in the first place. But being in this environment, it forces you into that position by default. So I think people their mentality is just a bit more about their own sort of sovereignty and independence by default. So I guess you would hope that more people would be seeing through the scam of the last 2 years, because as far as the city folk, it just drags them deeper into the kind of government net where you're just more and more reliant on them. And I think when you come into an environment like this, you realize how largely irrelevant they are. You know, it's like, I don't need your help, I'm good. Like, you know, nature provides and I'm just cracking on. You know, so that's it, really, just about becoming more self-sufficient.
Yeah, absolutely. How is the we'll get into your latest work and videos for the show tonight, and how has that been? I guess you've been building your channels and videos and everything, and your work doing Jay Wilderness and everything. And now you've moved there. How has that fitted as well? Is it, because it's going to be a lot quieter, yeah, but I guess you're still looking at all that is happening, you know, online. And have you been able to continue? Because it looks like, well, we'll cover it tonight anyway. It looks like you're, I would say, looking at your last couple of videos, it's intensifying. I think it's the best work that you've done, to be honest.
Mm. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's still bubbling away. I'm not planning on stopping. I think before I moved here, I had already decided that by moving here, I was gonna pay more attention to it almost and try and ramp things up a little bit. Not for any reason other than I'm just sort of motivated to do that. And I think the majority of the videos that I have been doing over the last couple of years, they're quite sort of intensive. They take quite a long time to produce. They might not look that way, but like all the editing and, you know, and trying to build a theme using sort of publicly available clips and videos and stuff. So it's quite time consuming. So I'd like to have another sort of an outlet as you do in, you know, in terms of like podcasts or maybe just sort of short 5-minute videos, just going over a topic using my voice where the other videos don't. So yeah, I'd like to ramp things up, but as far as the normal output, that the move hasn't really changed that, because I've always just got kind of projects on the back burner or things that are half finished or ideas. There's always stuff to be chipping away at. So I think I've got like 4 draft videos currently, and one that I'm probably going to post tonight, which is the theme of that is the climate scam, which has been ramping up over the last week or so with the UK heat wave, which was
you're all going to get heart attacks because of the heat. That's why I was making a joke the other night on the show. Imagine what that means for India. They're all dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's crazy, exactly. Isn't it?
Why isn't it just permanently on fire? Why isn't the country just in flames on a consistent basis?
Well, you're in the UK now. Around that, is it that hot that you're going to get a heart attack and die?
Well, this is why it was such a joke. I mean, it's like, oh, I think the argument, it was like not even 2 days of intense heat. I mean, you could describe it as intense heat as far as the UK is concerned, because it was like 40 degrees. But I mean, to me, that's obviously like beautiful. I'd take that every day, of course. But it was 2 days maximum. Temperature, and it was like
around 39. Yeah. It hits 40 with hot wind and.
I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's full on. But I'd quite happily sit out in that all day. But regardless, it was like the news.
You're all gonna die.
We're just insane. Crazy. They were just running like the BBC, Channel 4. They all managed to pull together these kind of heat wave special news broadcasts, you know, within sort of 24 hours. And it was like the entire day was dedicated to, you know, this intense heat that's, you know, crushing the economy and the country.
And giving you heart attacks.
I mean, it's so, it's just so transparently, you know, propagandizing more fear and stuff and using language like no one is immune to climate change, which I think is very telling. You know, this is the word immune obviously relates to viruses and stuff, in the same way that when Klaus Schwab was going on about the cyber pandemic, you know, the threat of cyber attacks, they're sort of using the same language as they did with the coronavirus. And I think that's really telling as to their sort of plan to, you know, jump from one emergency to the next off the back of the, you know, the scandemic. I don't know whether you're noticing that as well. Very, you know, subtle, clever use of language to propagate
That's
fear.
right. That's right. Absolutely. It's amazing the shift we're seeing too, isn't it?
I mean, is it the same in Australia? Are you having the same kind of drama in terms
yeah,
of weather and
flooding and rain
stuff?
here pretty
Yeah.
much. Flooding
Ouch.
and rain and cold. But yeah, someone put a image up which was great on Telegram. I think it was from France, and it's got a, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically a weather report from years and years back and one now. And years back, it was like higher temperatures and just normal, but now it's all in red and it's all fear mongering, you know. Yeah, that's right. And of course, now it's incredible to watch. I think most people who are not studying and researching what we are, they're just caught up in the spider's web of propaganda and deceit and mixed up in all of this, like in a milkshake, and they're just going along for the ride like they're inside some movie, you know. And when you study it and look at it, it's just incredible what they're doing, yeah, and how they're moving forward with the climate change, and this is saturated in your last few videos that I watched today, and you know, with everything that's happening, the technology, 5G, you know, the insects, and the pandemic propaganda. Yeah. And I was just thinking that today, you know, like doing podcasting and everything, it's a good way to incrementally spell out and break down what we're seeing on the ground as we try to stay ahead of all of this system. But with what you're doing in your videos, you know, and you're showing the conclusive evidence and proof in there and images and everything, and of what they're really doing, it's any Joe Blow would put that on, watch it and go, oh wow, I didn't know that. It's a quick way to wake people up, because you're using music, clear images, video, it's entertaining. I watched your last three today and I couldn't turn them off. You know, you're just like, what is this? And it's not too long. I know that these videos that you're doing are fantastic for people who are on the fence, who are kind of swaying like a bowling pin in the alley that you didn't knock over. And they're thinking, something's wrong. My gut feeling, my intuition is telling me something's weird here. But I've got both feet in the pool. I've got this left leg in this pool and this right leg in the other pool, and I don't know which way to go. And people are telling me this and that, and I'm watching the news. And I think that those videos you're doing is good for us and our listeners and everyone out there to send to neighbors, to relatives, anyone, maybe people you work with you get that feeling that they're starting to wake up a little bit, and say, look, just watch this, because they're not going to read a book. If you give them links, and maybe they'll, I think a lot will maybe put on podcasts, but I think that's later when they're woken up more, they'll put on and listen to a whole podcast. But your videos are great, I think, as well, to wake people up. And I didn't think that originally. I thought this is just for all of us who know what's going on. But I think that's where I can see with your latest few videos you're moving into. This is really good to share to people who are starting to feel a little bit weird here, because you do it quick. And as you said, it's not easy. I can imagine, because you know, it's not easy to edit and make all that in such a short time. And I was watching your latest ones. That's not easy to do. So well done. I think you've stepped it up a level here with your move, so that's good. Maybe you've got some solitude there, and you've got the paintbrush out, and you're making it all happen. But fantastic work, buddy! Fantastic work. I really enjoyed your latest one. We'll chat a bit about that.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean,
I wanted to share this and go on about it on a podcast, but I waited for tonight so we could cover it. It's absolutely unbelievable, because we've studied this and talked about it a lot. This predictive programming, wow. Amazing. Mm.
This goes to another level. It's just so
another level. Yeah. This is your latest video, Hannah Fry. An extraordinary series of coincidences. Let's talk about this video a little bit. I found this absolutely incredible. And, we've been chatting about this a lot. This is actually, folks, for some of the listeners who are aware of these Hollywood movies, this is a BBC contagion experiment, wasn't it? Offering insights, or I would say heavy insights, into COVID-19 control. This is a BBC citizen science experiment that they say helped predict how different strategies could control the spread of COVID-19. This is a public experiment that was done in real time, live on the British people. This is a team of researchers for the BBC accumulating all this data and everything about simulating outbreaks of COVID-19 to see which public health interventions might be effective, contact tracing, all of this, quarantining. How all this might work. How did you get onto this BBC contagion experiment? Obviously, I'm in Australia and you're over there. How did this take flight? Was it on your TV over there? And give us a bit of bullet points.
What happened was, what happened was the BBC announced a new documentary that aired a couple of days ago, actually, on the 20th of July, and it was titled Unvaccinated. And it was to be hosted by Hannah Fry, the subject of the recent video. The BBC making a documentary called Unvaccinated, where they get, you know, six people on with the idea of hearing them out, you know, what's your reasons for not doing this and all that. So obviously straight away where everyone is thinking, well, this is just going to be a standard hit piece. This is just a template BBC documentary to demonize and ridicule the vaccine deniers or whatever you want to call them. So straight away I was like, well, Hannah Fry, that rings a bell. I seem to remember that she's got a bit of a history with the BBC. And it was 2017, 2018 when they put out this contagion documentary that you just spoke about. And like you say, that was basically a tabletop exercise to showcase what would be done in the case of a massive pandemic viral outbreak in the UK. And it was set in a small town called Haslemere, which I believe is like South London region, just a, you know, relatively small town, and it turns out that the reported actual outbreak of coronavirus itself broke in Haslemere, the same small town where the BBC ran a BBC, you know, a tabletop exercise 2 years previous, hosted by Hannah Fry, and she also in 2019, which is showcased in my video, hosted a lecture, like a Christmas science lecture. So again, this is before the pandemic started, where she was doing a kind of live experiment with children in the audience, where on one side she was throwing ping pong balls at kids. And if the ping pong ball hit the kid, it had to put a zombie mask on to show that it was infected with the zombie virus. And then on the other side of the audience, they had kids wearing face masks.
It's bizarre.
And, you know, proudly announcing that they would be immune to the zombie virus because they're wearing face masks. And she got some woman up to help her out who was on Pfizer's payroll and, you know, that kind of stuff. So all this occurred, you know, effectively 2 years and 1 year before the actual pandemic broke out. And the video explores some of the people involved in that operation and how they're closely connected once the actual pandemic broke out, they were perfectly placed to kind of roll out exactly the same measures showcased in the documentary in real life. So, you know, it's only a couple of degrees away from Neil Ferguson as well. You know, this whole operation, who was obviously the guy that started the computer models in the first place, that, you know, turned this into the clown show that it became. Right. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell. Just insanity, you know, just the mere fact. I actually tweeted the video at Hannah Fry and said, on, you know, seeing as you're a mathematician, maybe you could calculate the odds for me on, you know, your documentary predicting the outcome before it happened. No reply, of course.
The mockery too. They're mocking people. They're mocking people, making them put on zombie masks in the audience. This is so bizarre. So bizarre. It's just incredible. I'm sort of wondering how many people know about this and have seen that.
A lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's another guy, Hugo Talks in the UK, has done he's much bigger creator than me, and he jumped on it as well a couple of days later after my video. And yeah, there's been a lot of people who are aware of this now, and a lot of it stems from the work of this really tiny channel called Pig Hooey, which I linked to in my show notes, as I always, you know, provide the sources for everything. And she goes into much more detail. So, you know, if you go to my video and check out show notes, you can dig a bit deeper and see how far the rabbit goes down the hole.
It's incredible, isn't it? Watching the clips that you put up there today, I was just shaking my head in disbelief. It's cartoon world. It's fantasy make believe world, and they're simulating this virus. It was really interesting as well how when she was out there and she got that town to come in and to go on their mobile phones to see exactly. Who was infected. Yeah. And they were showing through the phones when they went back into the studio, and they were showing her moving into the other person infecting that person's phone. What the hell are they talking about here? This is insane.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah, they were pre-programming the idea that you're going to be tracked using mobile phone.
Contact tracing.
Yeah, like 100%. And one of the people who were involved with creating the app which they used in the program was then commissioned by the government to make the app that was used in real life. The same company. Like an Irish-based. So...
I mean, the
normies would just argue, well, you know, well, that's, you know, the government was expecting a pandemic at some point, and they decided, oh, this show was fantastic, let's just do what they did. But that would be disregarding the connections to begin with. You know.
That's right. I was saying this last year, I think, and that the QR coding was just a training tool, like putting a kid on a bike and using training wheels, you know, and taking them off, and then the kid flies. I've been saying it ever since. And then we had the Premier Dominic Perrottet in New South Wales basically come out on live TV to the media, and he basically came out not long ago and he said the QR coding was nothing. It really wasn't anything. And the only reason they continued it was to give people confidence. Because when the government took the QR coding out, people felt almost naked in a way. And then they would, because I watch them, I'm like a fly on the wall when I go out. I watch people and their reactions and how they interact and everything. And they were holding their phones up and QR coding into every single store. So they would hold their iPhone up. They would QR code, make sure it was done. You could see old Billy Bob there, he was making sure that it was all done. And then they would enter the store, they would do the squirt squirt of the hand sanitizer, and they lift up their mask and everything. It's like training a poodle for a circus show to do the tricks, you know. And He actually came out and said, we only did it to get people back into the restaurants and everywhere. And we thought that we would. So basically what the Premier of New South Wales admitted on live TV, and we've covered this and I've played the videos, he said that when they got rid of the QR code, people were upset about it. And that so they basically, some of the shops and supermarkets and stuff and things, they still had it there, but it wasn't going anywhere. And so the people would just feel comfortable to go out and hold their phone up, but it didn't mean anything. And so he basically admitted right there that that was just training people for what's really coming. The track and trace system, the AI beast system grid that was implemented during the lockdowns. And that's what it's all about. Do you know, Jay? I don't know if I sent you this. People will say, Adam, I'm sick of hearing this, but I've covered it a bunch of times. There's actually a TV show now, and I'm wondering if you remember this, because it actually is a show that started in the UK, and it's a show that they're building up here, and it's called Hunted, and they filmed this TV show in Melbourne. And I don't need to tell you about what happened in Melbourne, Australia, the longest and worst, most severe and brutal lockdowns in the world under dictator Daniel Andrews, with the police forces shooting at people's backs and everything and smashing people's heads on the ground. Just absolute draconian tyranny. During the lockdowns in Melbourne, they were filming a TV show called Hunted, which is modelled off a UK show. It's a reality TV show where couples are taken in a van, let loose in the city centre, and they have to try to escape the technology. And so it's kind of like Jason Bourne, Bourne Identity kind of stuff. And they've got this new TV show in Australia. It started like 2 weeks ago on Sunday night on prime time, and they've been pushing it. So if you're in Australia and you're watching TV, suddenly it goes and it gets interrupted, and they've got these Hunted, a preview of the show. It's really weird. Yeah. And everywhere you look, they're promoting it. What is it? It's basically people being unleashed in Federation Square in Melbourne and they have to hide from the technology. And they've got these people who are ex-cops and spooks who are hunting them down. They've actually got people hunting them on the street. And then I guess the last person who survives gets $100,000. And I'm just thinking, and the thing is, when Melbourne was in the worst, darkest part of its lockdown, so you couldn't even put your nose outside, people were saying, and we covered this a lot, that there were these planes coming in the night, landing in Melbourne, going out and out. And what I heard, and I can't prove it or absolutely confirm it, it's just what I was looking into. They were saying that these flights were coming from China and they were filled with this technology that was being implemented all around Melbourne. Right. And I'm not there, I'm in Sydney. But I tell you, man, it looks to me like they've done this TV show, Hunted, to promote the technology that was implemented into Melbourne City during the lockdowns, but to kind of put it out there like it's entertainment so people don't realize that it's really happening, so they think it's, you know, it's all just entertainment.
Yeah,
that's right. But it is about technology and 5G and everything, and that shit has gone in. And now they're making TV shows. And, you know, the thing is, why the hell are they making TV shows about hunting people in a city trying to escape invasive and draconian or Orwellian technology, when people are losing their jobs, they're committing suicide, people are getting sick, they're being locked down, kids can't go to school, everybody's forced to wear masks and get tested, they're petrified, the media are scaring everybody, people are closing down their stores and businesses, mum and pop stores have been closed forever, and here they are making a show about hunting people using AI technology. And I just sit here and I shake my head. And you know what? It was one of the top shows to air in Australia. And people are watching and they're sitting there on their couches in their houses at night. And you know what they're doing? They're watching and they're being entertained, looking at their own demise. And they are entertaining you, but they're showing you in a reflection in the mirror that you're looking into that black screen. They're showing you your own demise because people are just too stupid to pick it up and see what's really going on here. And I find it absolutely sick that any Australian would watch that after what that murdering dictator did, that needs to be arrested and put on trial for war crimes, basically, for murder. That's what he's a murderer. And here they are making TV shows, glamorizing all of this. I just find it absolutely sick.
Yeah, the timing especially, because I do remember the show.
You remember that in the UK?
Channel 4, it's a good few years ago, but I think they're still running it, you know, periodically. And the same thing, they over-elaborate the advertising for it. They do make a big deal out of it. And, you know, it's the classic sort of entertainment that people would watch, isn't it? But, you know, like you say, it just normalizes this idea that you're being tracked all the time, but with the idea that it's going to be great for catching criminals and stuff like that. You know, that's what the normies are probably left with. That then, you know, the next time some sort of shooting violence occurs, they might be wondering to themselves, well, I thought that tech was there to stop that from happening. Weird how that, you know, they always seem to evade the authorities or whatever. But yeah, no, it's sick. It really is, yeah. I mean, I don't know what goes through these people's heads really when they sit there fawning over that kind of stuff. But funnily enough, but you know, on the tip with the Hannah Fry stuff, I was going to ask you actually, because one of the things that came out of the interviews with Hannah Fry was that show, the Contagion tabletop exercise, was apparently exported to Australia as well. So it looks like that model, I don't know whether you saw it, but apparently that show is exported to your country. Hannah Fry appeared on an Australian podcast talking about it. So it's amazing how much British TV does.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know whether you've just got a talent a talent for propaganda or something. But yeah, it seems
we grew up on British TV. You know, when I was a kid, growing up, you know, with a TV in the house, that's kind of what I remember, all those shows. But, you know, there was, there's a lot of shows. And
What were the big ones?
Yeah, it was just a lot of comedies and TV shows. It was kind of smart and witty, and there was a lot more innocent, you know, and fun. And, yeah, I don't know, it's really crazy. But I would say, looking at Australia, because we are an experiment, I would say that they would take that model and they would just implement it, but bamboozle and confuse everybody. It would be drip fed. You know, like we haven't just had that one model where they've said, oh, we're they've come out on a TV show here and they've said, oh, we're going to have a simulation. They don't do that here. It's shattered. It's like walking into a room of broken mirrors with, you know, bright lights on and saying, find this piece. It's what it's like here. It's just so all over the place here. It's crazy, you know, and so much happened here during the last couple of years. And so much fear and terrorizing people over something that simply isn't there. You know, it's been astonishing to watch as a researcher and a podcaster, just to sit back and watch it. It's been absolutely unbelievable. But that is a clear, because, you know, because you're this is a BBC thing and this is an absolute in your face. It's not just mockery. This is the thing that we always tell people, these Freemasons, they have to tell us what they're going to do. Always. They always have to tell us what they're going to do, and they do that through entertainment and TV shows and everything. And this is done in order so we contract, because we don't say anything. So if millions of people out there watch these TV shows like that, which is astonishing to me, Contagion Experiment, pretty much, you know, showing you what they're going to do, and I mean, a what they call a science experiment, and people watch that, but no one says anything. Then we've contracted with them, and then they bring in the real life drill or event. And we know before these kinds of shootings and things, they always do drills or events before. Could be a year before or whatever. They're always telling us.
I think we can.
Yeah, that's how they do it. They tell us. Yeah. They have to tell you what they're doing. Mm. Always. And we know this.
A lot of people have said that, and I've never really sort of subscribed to it necessarily, but I've come round to that idea, because you almost have to, because like you say, we could name every major event, PSYOP or whatever, and there's always a drill or an exercise, just always, you know. So you have to start coming to that conclusion, because it's not like a lot of it behind closed doors. It's, you know, these drills are essentially broadcasted for everyone to view.
That's right.
One of the notable ones in the UK previous was probably the 7/7 London bombings, where a year before that, the BBC again, BBC Panorama Investigations, they ran a live tabletop exercise of a bombing in London, and it was one of the guests was, I think it was a guy called Peter Power, who ended up running the exact same drill on the day that the bombings were actually carried out. And he was on live TV going, yeah, we were actually running this simulation this morning. And then it turned into a live occurrence. You know, you're just like, well, what are we supposed to think about that? Could it be any more transparent? Again, can we get Hannah Fry out with her calculator to calculate the odds on this? You know,
it's incredible. It's I was just sharing recently some videos we saved on 9/11. I don't know if you've seen the Back to the Future ones on predicting 9/11.
I have seen a few things.
Towers going down and the Twin Pines Mall and stuff. It's you can't deny it. I mean, this is Back to the Future, the movie. I mean, it's probably...
There was another show by the makers of The X-Files. I'll send you a link to it. I can't remember the title of the show, but it was like a spin-off of The X-Files from the same creator. And they did the same show. They did an episode where they were showing pilots piling into the World Trade Center towers, you know, using planes. I'll have to send you a link to it. But yeah, so much programming with that. So much.
Someone sent me a bunch of stuff that I'll send through to you anyway on 9/11. It's just it's been going on for
The Lone Gunman.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that came out.
That was a X-Files creator. But there's a lot of stuff in the X-Files as well that I've kind of used in some of my videos. I think there's a recent one where Gillian Anderson's going on about, you know, our DNA has been captured and something's been inserted into our DNA and all this kind of stuff. There's so much of that. You know, you can go down extreme rabbit holes with it, but who knows how far the programming goes? You know?
Oh, I think it's right throughout. It's since movies began. Mm. As we always talk about the Frankenstein character and transhumanism, the Dracula character, you know, we've done so much on this and never shut up about it. But it's amazing. One thing, Corey, another guest I chat to in Florida, he sent me the end scene of Fight Club. You know, the movie with Brad Pitt. It's a cult sort of movie.
Yeah.
And there's a scene there where there's this music playing and all these buildings are coming down. All these towers are coming down in the movie. It's really powerful. And I thought, I'll look up that movie, and I looked up the release date of the movie, and it's 11th of November 1999. So you can turn that 999 up for a 666. This is Masonic.
The 11th.
11th as well.
Yeah, the number 11.
9/11 and 11th of November, 1999, 666. This is gematria. If you look at gematria and you look at the number, it's all in the numbers. It's all in the numbers.
I hadn't really paid much attention to gematria until I realised that Aleister Crowley
That's right.
was very focused on the numbers. And I since learned the number 11 is a very significant number to him. It's like the power of evil, that's what it seems to represent. But I think I mentioned him last time, that William Ramsay is a good guest to consider. He talks a lot about the occult nature of the film Fight Club and all the significant numbers and imagery used in the film. I wasn't aware of it at all.
That's right.
Yeah, apparently it's right.
It's satanic, ritualistic. It's symbolism. It's everything to them. Hollywood. Yeah, programming, channeling. Oh boy, it's once you start looking into it, it really is a matrix. We've been talking a lot about the Matrix film. I did a whole podcast a few weeks ago just talking about the Matrix film and looking behind it, what they were saying, because they did use a lot of Gnostic texts and things. And I was breaking down the film because it was on and I watched it again, and there's just so much in that film. So much in that film that they're showing that we can see today. It's amazing. Yeah. And I saved a few today. I saved a few, which I could cover here. One was, I don't know if you saw this one, was a film called Songbird, Songbird, came out. It wasn't a great film, but it came out right during COVID. And basically, this was up on all the streaming websites and stuff like that. It says the story takes place in a near future where 110 million people have died from COVID-23, which is both horrifying to imagine and also it's inexplicably great considering that the virus seems to kill just about everyone who isn't immune to it. The city of LA has been living or not living under various states of quarantine for 213 consecutive weeks, with the infected targeted by a mandatory government phone app and herded into ominous Q zones from which there is no escape. In other words, COVID-23 is a death sentence, however you slice it, and yet somehow the virus continues to spread. That was one that came out. And then I was looking at your video that you did, and I was looking at other films, because Contagion is a big one. There's been a whole bunch. There was one called What's So Bad About Feeling Good, 1968. The film imagines a kind of inverted COVID-19, where instead of making people miserable, a virus makes people happy. This we saw in 28 Days Later, I think, a film from the UK where people get a rage virus. That was one that I promote. Another one was called The Stand from 1994. It was a TV miniseries. And it's very striking because it depicts how deadly pandemic spreads quickly and accurately predicted that some people, even at the highest levels of government, would downplay the threat in a bit of good, terrible timing. There's now a new version of the film. And Stephen King wrote this way back in 1978, and it's a Stephen King book called The Stand. There was also one called Outbreak. From 1995, people get confused with that one, but Contagion is after that. So Outbreak was with Dustin Hoffman and Morgan Freeman and Rene Russo, it was from some kind of monkey kind of thing from Africa, and everyone got infected as well. And then, of course, what you put in your clips there, Contagion, Soderbergh. This is one of the biggest, and of course they won Oscars and everything, but it's all in Contagion. There was another one called Before the Fire, 2020, and they're saying this is very eerie, how this this predicts COVID-19, and it goes on before the fire. People can look up that. And there's another one even called The Time Machine from 1960. From an H.G. Wells adaption, imagined a two-castle future in which humans have evolved into Eloi and Morlocks. So transhumanism kind of stuff to do with the virus. So it goes on and on, folks. And this is just stuff that I looked up today. But I would say, you know, looking at all these movies, I would say the Soderbergh film called Contagion, that really predicted COVID-19. And as I said, it won Oscars and everything, and it was had all the big players in there. If anyone hasn't seen that, I'd say it's really a struggle to watch, but that is a big one. Fear, 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 and predictive programming.
For sure.
Predictive programming.
Yeah.
Books, TV shows.
The interesting one that I think I used the trailer for that in the intro to the Hannah Fry video. You probably spotted it. And it was like, even after a short amount of time, it became obvious that the CDC had a huge involvement with that film. They were kind of hired essentially to provide the advice that, you know, kind of built the narrative about how they would be dealing with this scenario. So again, it's like, it's not only kind of predictive programming and in one sense, but you have active involvement from the people who are going to provide the solution to the problem. That's the, you know, and people would argue, well, that's normal because, you know, you're making a film and then you would seek advice from whoever, but it, you know, it goes beyond that because it just so happens that they're, you know, in the position to dictate the terms about how you're going to be dealing with this stuff. And I suppose that's what's interesting when you delve deeper into Hollywood and the movie industry in general, is when you reach a certain point and you need, I don't know, you need to utilize some military equipment or something for a portion of the film. You have these contracts where, you know, the military then essentially have the rights to dictate portions of the film and what they showcase. There's been a lot of people that's done a lot of work on that, and I think there's even been a lot of Freedom of Information Act stuff that's come out in the last couple of decades about that. You know, the intelligence agencies essentially having a say over what's depicted in a film or the narrative and the storyline. So, yeah, it's really transparent, I guess, how much the movie industry is shaping reality. You know, seemingly providing entertainment for the masses that's really meant to be programming them into their reality, for sure.
It's so interesting you've mentioned that, because that was something I was studying ages ago. And I was reading I'm not going to be able to find it, I know, but it was so... I was looking at it ages ago. Oh, yeah, there it is. Full Metal Jacket. Apocalypse Now and stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was looking at all these US war films, obviously with films like Top Gun and stuff, and someone... And it was ages ago, and I don't have it in front of me, but I read a really fantastic article, and the guy was explaining exactly that. He was talking about US military's involvement in Hollywood film, that the scripts have to basically be sent to them to get the okay, or they wouldn't fund it. And he was also bringing up like old films. You remember, like I Dream of Jeannie and things like that, where the husband was a military guy, and how that propaganda went through all those old films going back. I think it's Good Morning Vietnam and so many films. But, you know, obviously there was a lot that they didn't approve of. But obviously something like Tom Cruise's Top Gun, they would have just said, here you go. he's the Air Force. He's everything for you. Just use it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's not even a conspiracy as regards to Top Gun. Is in that it was literally made as a recruitment tool
That's right.
for the military. It was to encourage people to step up and, you know, view being in the military as this heroic venture, you know. So it was a recruitment film, like openly, is, you know.
Iceman.
All the documents have been show that, yeah. Yeah, it's nuts. It's
well,
nuts.
Yeah, as I said, you look at Full Metal Jacket and Platoon, it didn't give them a good look. But, in that sense, you've got Hollywood directors. What are they going against, the US military? Or is that just their way to put out both sides? You know, it's so hard to say.
Yeah, I guess you can have a script and then you just reach the point, especially if you're a big budget director and stuff. You know, you need to outsource a lot of stuff, and that's when you have to go to these sort of, you know, governmental institutions or whatever to utilize their equipment, and that's when they'll kind of step in and go, you know, you can use it, but we want to have a say over what you're depicting in the storyline. So I think that's where it comes in. But it's funny you talk about The Matrix, because are you familiar with the backstory with The Matrix in the writers of the film actually stole the script for The Matrix. So there was an original writer.
This is really interesting that you've just brought that up, because on the show that I broke this down, I was just no, I'm not. And I'd like you to go through this, because I was talking about that I didn't believe that the Wachowski brothers or sisters actually wrote that first film. I just thought that because they weren't able to copy that film in the next ones, and the remake is just not good, it was just that first one, and I thought, did they really actually put that together?
Yeah, I'll have to send you the information, because the guy, you'll be able to talk to him, you'll be able to get him on the show, I'll be sure of it. It was originally called The Immortals, and it was written by a guy who's since just been basically harassed for his entire life, because he's trying to take it to the courts, because he's got all the proof that he wrote the original script for The Matrix. You'll be able to get him on your show to talk about that for sure.
Do you know his information at all? Could you send me?
I don't know his information, but I'll be able to give you his name, and you'll be able to dig him out. He's been on a bunch of other shows, not so much recently. And there's another guy called Titus Ross who's interviewed him, who I know, so I could probably get his details through him. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting story, because there's essentially been kind of, as far as I can remember, sort of deaths in his family even that have been attributed to all this stuff, you know. But it's interesting again, because there was that, was it called Sagittarius 1 or something? I've probably totally botched that. You know, the film that depicted the fake Mars landing. I think it was starred O.J. Simpson and stuff. I think it was like a mid to late 70s film. Sagittarius 1, I think it was called. But originally that film was about a faked moon landing, but someone stepped in at the last minute and made them change the script. So there's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird, because that was just my intuition, you know. I've not heard anyone say that. I just thought to myself that there's just too much in the Matrix film. There's too much that I just can't believe, because then it's just weird, because those Wachowski brothers who have had sex changes, apparently, and one, they've changed sexes. And then one of them has done the new Matrix film. It's just a copy. They've tried to copy the first one, and it's a mess. And I'm not wasting my time. But, you know, like that first one, I do not believe. It's like people trying to tell me that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg came up with Facebook. It's ridiculous, you know. It's like, it's not going to happen. And I never believed that they wrote that. They were there and they directed and they were part of it, but I just don't believe that the heart of that movie, The Matrix, came from them. It came from somewhere else. And I don't need anyone to tell me that. I can see it as a viewer. And I was wondering, where's that missing chunk? And you've just told me that, and it's I'm going to look into that. That is
yeah.
And it's really interesting because I haven't spoken to you since the last time you've brought that up, and my members know that I've been talking about that. And there you go. There you go.
Right.
Isn't that?
Yeah. There you go.
You're not. Yeah, there you go. See, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. All right. Let's move on to finish up the show. Let's talk about your Let's talk about your video. Let me get it up here. Where did I save it? Give me a look.
You want to talk about insects?
Oh, that's 5G, that's or... we've been talking about insects a lot. I was going to talk about. Ah, damn it!
All ties into climate and everything, doesn't it?
Well, it's just incredible. I was going to talk about new magenta. This is incredible. This is one of your latest videos about the 5G rollout and the new magenta from Sprint. This is all happening, I'm guessing, in the UK. How bizarre is this, with the Queen coming out and touching the ball and then the DNA thing lighting up? Okay. So what we do know is that COVID and the injections and the 5G and the technology are all interconnected, folks, and they're telling us right now. This is really strange. This is happening in the UK with the colour. Give us a little bit of a background on what you found out here.
It stemmed from an article from Alison McDowell, who I linked to in the show notes, who kind of pointed this stuff out, because it totally gone over my head, this kind of Queen Jubilee ceremony. But it was the idea that this, I thought it would be the video that kind of people lost me on, to be honest, because it was a kind of a little bit wacky. But I think I don't think you can underplay, you know, the significance of a ceremony like that with the Queen of England, and, you know, all the symbology that was used, like the tree of life and the three strand DNA, and given what we've been through in the past 2 years. So I guess it was just like worthy of taking a look at and seeing what was what. And it reminded me of the T-Mobile advert, which was presented as like a spoof advert, because they were sort of jokingly saying, oh, we've discovered a new colour called magenta and all this. And it was really weird. It just didn't really make sense. And then it also reminded me of this T-Mobile light show that they did on a spire in the US, where they depicted a lot of kind of DNA imagery and the lotus and a lot of kind of weird occult imagery. And I suppose I just made some kind of judgments about what was being showcased there. And like you say, the connection between the DNA, the tree and the tree of life, and this kind of emerging 5G technology that's, you know, slowly but surely being rolled out. So I don't make any kind of grand statements about, you know, exactly what's going on there, but there's certainly some significant imagery.
What's
being
with the color? Because it's just pink.
Yeah.
What are they trying to say?
It's sort of considered like a rare sort of color. Is it that seems to be how it's spoken about? That it's
like
kind
a pinky
of rare
red,
and significant. Yeah, and there's been like battles behind the scenes as to who owns the right to this specific Pantone color and stuff. But T-Mobile, I think, are the company that have commandeered it and used it as their brand. And there's a lot of people talking about it now. I've noticed this magenta and how it's sort of become the color that kind of represents this technology.
There's a guy, Mike Katz, he's the chief marketing officer for T-Mobile, and he says new magenta is a vision, a feeling, an emotion. I hesitated to bring this color into the world, but new magenta is too magnificent not to be shared. He's talking about technology and 5G and mobile phones. What the hell is wrong with this guy? What a strange thing.
It's kind of a weird. It's kind of a weird.
And I think, for sure. Like, it's so. It. What? Can you tell us a little bit about the Queen and this ceremony that went on? Because I didn't see this.
It was a Jubilee ceremony. It's going on. Like kind of like whatever the Jubilee represents, is it like 50 years or something of being in power? So it was obviously like a really huge deal. We got a couple of bank holidays out of it, and, you know, it was all over the TV for a few days. So it was pretty significant. I mean, she's what, 90 odd now, so I doubt she's going to be around for much longer. So it was a big deal made out of it. But she appeared in some carriage depicted as a hologram, so she wasn't even kind of in the carriage. She was just rolled out to hit this sort of magenta button at some point and trigger off a little light show. But I don't know, there are some people that propose that maybe she's not even still like alive, a hologram now, you know, which
I had a have a guest on, Jason, we chat recently, and he was bringing up a video from the news where it was showing the Queen and her head was too far in front of her body. That's what he was saying. Like, her head was like maybe an arm length or half an arm length in front of her body. And he said it just looked really weird. And I didn't see it. So it was just something that he brought up. But it's very strange. You hear about, you know, these people in latex masks. All sorts of things going on.
Yeah, like body doubles isn't a conspiracy theory, is it? They do say a lot of, you know, people in those places, they all have them because it just gives them an out if they can't attend something. So it's not that far fetched, is it? And there's been a lot of photos of the Queen where you're just a bit like, gosh, she looks really different, you know. So yeah, who knows really? Who knows whether they even have any kind of power at this point at all?
Just a front, like actors in a play to distract the people while everything gets done behind the curtains, you know?
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when she does pass away, or at least when it's announced that she's passed away, the UK is going to be in a weird place. It's just going to be wall-to-wall the Queen's death for years, you know? And then I think we'll have Prince Charles stepping up, who's like Mr. Number One kind of climate change agenda dude, you know, just constantly going on about it.
Did you catch that video? And I don't have it in front of me. We mentioned it on a podcast where Prince Charles was talking and he was mentioning something. It just seemed to do with AI or something. He was talking about him or he. Did you see that video?
Doesn't really.
I have to see if I can dig it up. Yeah, it was a very, very strange speech that he gave. He was referring to not a person, but something that was in charge or coming or controlling everything. It was such a weird video.
Sounds like I need to get a hold of that, because that ties in with the video that I'm making. Boy, I wish I saved it. Which is this kind of...
Go on.
Yeah, it's like the idea that the climate change agenda is kind of the one that kind of launches this idea of a world government, and, you know, kind of AI, so there wouldn't necessarily be any need for world leaders anymore, because it would be kind of done through
or police
AI,
or anything.
I think that would be. Yeah, and so that was one of the
and has it been injected into everybody where you are the system,
well,
you know?
Yeah,
and if you're not, you get cast out. How can you get money out and get paid and live and get food?
Yeah, this UBI system, right, where it's distributed according to your behavior,
right.
And that it's, kind of thing, yeah. I think UBI is an absolute inevitability, for sure.
It's obvious that's where they're going. And I've said it for years, that people will eventually become the system. Even mobile phones are just the training tools. They're training you into this new system where eventually you won't have ID or phones or passports or anything, that you will be the system. It will be you. And that's transhumanism.
Yeah. That's what that Yuval Noah Harari has been.
Yeah, isn't it weird how he stepped out from behind Klaus Schwab, this little Jewish guy? He shifted out from behind like a shadow, didn't he? He came out and he peered from nowhere, and he's talking about all this cryptic stuff. Whether the world puts up with it, I always say I think we're at that pinnacle, we're at that point where we're going to cross over into this. And it's in the Matrix. It's in the Matrix. It is. It's all in the Matrix in that first film, you know, with the AI and stuff, you know. Or we get spooked and we push back.
That's what's so interesting That's what's so interesting about, like, spotting things like the magenta thing. Mm. Because I kind of thought, like,
new magenta,
that would lose people. It was a little bit more far-fetched than I normally go to. But I think it's almost like, it's kind of spotting the symbols. It's kind of, you know, once you step outside the Matrix and you're kind of looking into it, you start spotting patterns, don't you? And you start spotting imagery or words they're using, or color schemes and stuff like that. And it's until you step out of the Matrix, you don't see any of that stuff. So, yeah, it's very
interesting,
true.
This magenta thing you've brought up anyway. They say here it's reimagined or born.
They claim that advert is just like comedy. It's just like a spoof. But, you know, there's something a little bit more significant going on there for sure. I mean,
what's happening in the UK? If we look at this new technology in 5G, not now so much, but were you seeing that? I mean,
well, certainly during the, I mean, I've thought, like, to be totally transparent about it, I've always had in the back of my mind that when this thing, the scandemic, kicked off from the very beginning, one of the main kind of conspiracy theorist sort of stuff was relating to 5G, wasn't it? And it was always the thing that got slammed down the hardest. You know, everyone who mentioned it were demonized, chucked off, cancelled, whatever. And so that's always been that's generally quite telling, isn't it? So I've always just kind of had this feeling, and not quite being able to pinpoint exactly what's going on there, that there is some link, you know. I'm pretty
interesting, how they call it, magenta, is it? Magenta, yeah, it's almost like magnets.
Yeah, right.
We know about magnets, don't we? The power of magnets, This could be about some kind of, not free energy, like the natural free energy that we should be having, but, we know about these frequencies and 5G frequencies, everything. It's not natural. It's not of this earth. It's not normal. Mm. This goes deeper. This goes much deeper, but these frequencies, I look at this and I think, oh boy. And to think that this is kind of coming from the UK is interesting too. Not from the US. Mm. This is a really weird thing that you've picked up on here. I've not seen this anywhere. Your video that I watched on YouTube is the only one that I saw of this, this new magenta. Mm. And this bold new color and stuff. Isn't this weird? Because I think this would, I'm sending this to some friends who decode and study all of this stuff. I really want to break this down a lot more. This color, this name, magenta, and this 5G and what this actually is, because it's really weird. And to go back, this is the strangest thing I think I have seen definitely in the last few years, with the Queen coming out and touching this ball, this crystal ball, touching it, and then it all lights up to the tree and this DNA thing. It's what is going on there at Buckingham Palace? This is insane, isn't it? Was this live on your TV? Did this play out live, or was?
I didn't personally see it, but the whole thing was.
This is so bizarre, isn't it? that it's coming from the Buckingham Palace and the fake royals. This is really
these little rituals,
very ritualistic. Yeah. I think that we would need time to start looking into this and breaking it down. There's a lot in this.
Yeah, well, keep me in the loop if you're going to run it by.
Oh man,
very interesting. There are a few other people who have queued into this. I'll send you some of the videos and Alison McDowell's article. She's very kind of vocal about those sort of transhumanist kind of topics, and where blockchain is taking things and stuff. So, yeah, he might be worth talking to her as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there's a lot in there. We'll continue looking at that and the predictive programming and what we do know, as I said, what we do absolutely know is they're using the TVs and the media and everything and all their programming outlets to tell you what they're doing. We absolutely know that. They're showing you what they're doing, but they're using certain forms of entertainment to sideline you to get you looking over another direction because you think that it's all entertainment. And so that actual programming goes into your subconscious mind. And that means that you're contracting with them. And it's not a written contract. It's a spiritual contract. Mm. And you're contracting with them. That means you know what's coming. But outwardly, as you walk around and you go to work and you live your day-to-day life, you walk around in this kind of dream state. You walk around in kind of like a limbo. And you know secretly, inwardly, what's coming and what's going to happen. But outwardly, as you live your life, you don't show that. You know what I mean? But you know, it's like the layers of an onion, and this is what it's all about. This is like black magic, and this is what they're doing. And so this is how they walk us in to this kind of digital enslavement, if you will. And so we know what's coming. We know what's happening. We haven't said anything and we haven't risen up and fought, you know, and fight them back. And we're just going along to get along. And that means that we're kind of slaves in a way, you know, because we inwardly, we know what's happening, but outwardly we're just walking around. And everything's cool. And so you can see it's like a Trojan horse.
I think, yeah, to put a positive...
I'm not being negative. It's difficult, I know. Yeah.
The positive, but definitely the positive spin is, I guess, just the, you know, like we're saying about the Matrix and stuff, once you're outside looking in and spotting these patterns and collectively sort of talking about it, it gives us an advantage, you know, because we kind of know, or at least think we know kind of what directions are going to be taken, and that allows us to be a good few steps ahead.
That's right.
I guess, you know, and I've always said it's like the so-called conspiracy theorists always have an advantage as well, because it's kind of like we're generally kind of like you with your nightly shows and stuff, you're feeding off what the mainstream are presenting. So you're always by default getting both sides of the stories, or, you know, at least hearing their side and then, you know, understanding what's trying to be said, you know, deep down. So whereas the normies on the other side, they only ever hear one side, and that's the mainstream side. So they're, you know, I think it's a shame that we're demonized, really, because we're getting a much bigger picture, generally speaking, of what's going on, what's unfolding.
That's right.
So never discount the conspiracy theorists.
I always say over and over and over again, it's all about awareness. It's all about awareness. And once you become aware, you can watch all the content. And this is in the Matrix. This is in the Matrix. He didn't believe that he could actually do it. And then at the end, when he realized he could do it, it just all bounced off him and he overcame it. And this is the same thing. You know, it's like once you become aware of the system and you're consciously aware of it, you can actually go into a room where people are watching the nightly news and you can look at that and they're all just like with drool coming out of their mouths and they're watching, and you can just, you laugh. You're just like, and it bounces off you. And it doesn't get to you. Totally. It doesn't make me depressed or make me angry or anything. I just watch it and I think this is amazing. And I just feel like I could personally just retire and not say anything and think whatever I am. I mean, that's fine. But I just feel like it's, I feel like it's important just to get up here and blab on about what I'm seeing, you know, and maybe people say, shut up, Adam, just shut up, you know. But, you know, I mean, I just enjoy it because I just look at the system. And you know what? I don't know why we're like this. And I don't think that you and I, Jay, are smarter than anyone. I don't feel smarter than anyone. And there's a lot of people around me that have much bigger jobs and they're much smarter than me. I just do this because I enjoy it. And I see the world differently. And I'll just quickly before we shut out tonight, I'll say I was covering this in The Matrix the other night, you know, because, you know, he's Neo and he's a computer programmer and he's working this day job and this Morpheus guy contacts him and then he gets involved with that and then he takes that pill, you know, he takes the red pill, whatever, and then he starts to hallucinate and then he wakes up inside the cocoon, inside the bubble where he's being used as fuel to fuel the AI system, you know. And so he's in this bubble and he's dreaming, he's asleep in this liquid bubble and he's inactive, and but he's projecting this life that he's living like a dream, you know, and he's living in this world and he's in an apartment and he's got a job and everything like that, but it's not real. And so they wake him up, and when they wake him up and he wakes up and he pulls the plugs out, the machine comes out and casts him out in the pool. And that's what I was saying in the podcast, that when you wake up in this world, when you start to see things differently and you think for yourself, the system kind of doesn't want you, and your friends and those around you who thought you were friends don't want you anymore. Because you don't agree with them and they think you're a conspiracy theorist. So you, in a way, you get cast out like that. And then they pull him up and they take him into the real world. That was part of what I was discussing about the Matrix, that when you wake up, the system kind of casts you away. And, you know, that you're just not wanted anymore because you're not part of the narrative. You're not part of the hive mind. And I was talking about that in the film, that's what I got from it. And that's kind of what happens. But
yeah.
You know, you come into contact with other people who are like you and who are thinking for themselves. And that brings on new horizons. Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean that just because you've lost old friends and family, that's the end, because there's new beginnings.
No.
You know, and it's not always a negative thing. That's what I want to say to people. I know it's really difficult for all of us out there who are thinking differently. And we're going on our own path, but that's a unique and positive thing, and it's an important thing because it means that you're being you and you're on the right path. And if those people are treating you differently because of that, then they're not part of your life anymore. But what you need to understand is that you will come into contact with better people, and that will really ricochet with you. And these are people that are part of not just this life, but many lifetimes that we've had in the past and we will have.
Yeah, yeah, it's all about finding
finding a tribe. I that's what some of my guests have said as well. It's funny you mention that, because I think that do we waste our time trying to always go back and pick up stragglers who have not listened? And try to pick them up and say, come here, come here. When does the point come, Jay, that we sort of say, look, we've tried to warn them. Now we're in our spot and we need to find our tribe and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's part of the motivation to bring it full circle. You know, why I've kind of moved to where I have. And I've always battled with this idea of like, you know, oh, I want to wake people up and all this. But I think that's actually kind of, you know, if you have that sort of strong desire, it's kind of has kind of quite a negative impact on your own existence, because that's such an uphill battle. And so I've sort of come to the conclusion that you might be better kind of placing your attention on the people that understand the reality in which you live, and trying to sort of fortify and build a stronger community around those people, and you know, try and get involved in positive stuff. Maybe people who are sort of running, you know, farms or growing their own food or something, and just getting involved in little cooperatives and trying to collectively become stronger as a unit and more self-sufficient. And then maybe along the way, you can pick up a few people who realize that that's generally a better way to live. And it's almost just like, you know, rather than spending so much attention on waking people up, who many of them, it will just never happen. Yeah, you just have to live life how you see it. And, you know, that's at least the steps that I'm trying to take, you know, moving up here.
Project your own consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, you don't want to be spending all your time trying to convince other people that your reality is the one. Because it's such a, I mean, even for me, it's been such a long journey. For me, you know, what, like 10, 15 years or something of being involved superficially in this kind of like online meme war or whatever, and it's a long journey to get to the point where you feel comfortable within yourself that you kind of, you know, you're comfortable with your own outlook and reality, you know, because I mean, for a long time, you just kind of, it's actually quite a painful experience to get to that point, you know, because you do become disillusioned, you become angry, you become frustrated, and you're shocked by a lot of the things that you learn, that your entire history is essentially a lie. And you lose people along the way, and you're kind of like, well, you know, is this really worth it? Is it just better to be ignorant and just go along and not say anything? But you know, obviously that's not really conducive to a happy existence. So yeah, it is a long journey to get to that point, but yeah, I think it's just about, like I say, establishing a strong community.
That's right. Well said. Well said.
Yeah. If we could end it on a
It
positive note,
is.
hopefully that
It
was
is,
good.
and
Yeah.
we always do that. And I always say, look, we have to dig through the mud, you know. And you can't ignore the things that are happening, whether they're negative or whatever. It's we are here. It's almost like we're in a video game, and it just depends on how we play. You know, whether it's positive or negative, and that's how we're, you know, it's I really look at this earth and all of our experiences as some kind of simulation. I look into simulation theory, and I think it's almost like that, you know. And it's like it's all about empathy, you know, and thinking about everything. You know, and will you just go gung ho for that, or will you think about things? And I think that's where we're at, and our listeners are at. We're thinking about things, and we're breaking things down, and some of those are going to be negative, and some of those are going to be positive, and a lot is going to be in between. But we can't ignore the negative and dark side of things. We have to, as you know, in our life experiences right now in this realm, we have to look at these things, and we have to break it down, and we have to mirror that out and talk about it, and we have to find ways around so that we can be better people, and our children can be better people. Because we can't learn if we're not, you know, if we're not looking at this stuff. We can't just go around it. There's no sidewinding this. It's there, and we have to look at it. And it's in our faces every day. And if we have to talk about it and get other people to look at it as well. So we, you know, that's what I always try and do on this podcast. It's not fear porn. It's like we're trying to break
No.
down everything, and we're talking about the positives and the negatives. And that's what I always try to do here. And we're not selling anything, nothing. We're just talking about everything. Like we're sitting around having a few beers around the fire, and we're talking about this stuff because there's always going to be things that are going to be a little bit ugly or very ugly. And we have to look at that as human beings and work out how we can make this better and find our way around. But we have to stay ahead of this game, as you said earlier on. We have to stay ahead. And, you know, awareness is the key. Think about this. If we weren't aware, we'd be jabbed. If we weren't aware, we'd be sitting in front of the nightly news right now. Okay? And that's what people need to understand. Because we're aware, we're not doing those things. And we're navigating the system because of our awareness. And awareness is free. And it's something that is inbuilt in you. It's not something that you have to acquire or go out and buy. It's part of you. And once you connect or reconnect with that awareness, it just comes naturally and it's endless because it's love. And, you know, it's a really amazing thing. And that allows us to go out with this loving heart center and just mirror that out and look at everything that we're seeing and all the incredible videos that you're doing. People can come in and see that. And, it's really important thing because they're going to start thinking, boy, I'm basically being scammed here, but that's okay. That's okay. You know, hey, you can go into a casino and get scammed out of all your money, you know, or you can get scammed by a used car salesman and buy a shitty car. You can get scammed, folks, with a lot of things, but it doesn't take away who you really are. You know, at the end of the day, you got to say, that's what's important. I have me and I have my health. And I'm going to look at this and be positive, and we're going to break all this down. And it's an important thing to do. And I think what you're doing is, and that's why I always want to reach out with you, is because I think video, you know, and doing what you're doing is such an important thing. And hey, we're living. Look, I like to listen to podcasts and I like to listen to audiobooks. I'm not so much of a reader at this time because of my time and having a little one and everything, but people are different. People like different kinds of things, but I know a lot of people will watch kind of video clips and it will wake them up and they'll think, boy, and I think it's a really good kind of what I would say, like a pop. You know, like they could see your videos and go, oh, geez, like, what's this all about? Yeah. You know, and if it gets them questioning things, that's what we want. We just want information out there because the mainstream media all around the world, and particularly in the UK and Australia, what can I say? It's dreadful, and they're just brainwashing people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having said all that about not spending so much time sort of with this rampant desire to wake people up, obviously that might sound ironic given the video.
It should come naturally for people, shouldn't it?
But like,
wait for it.
Yeah, like you say, like, yeah, it's like the motivation is almost more to like sort of poke fun at it, almost, you know, just kind of
a little bit of humor as well, you know, so it's not so serious and people don't shut out, they kind of continue watching. You've got a little bit of sort of humor and everything in there. And I think that's a natural thing, you know, like it's
yeah. And like you say, with the fence sitters, people in the middle, you know, there's a lot of those people, right? We were kind of, you know, they know something's up, but they can't quite put their finger on it, you know. And if we do want to build, you know, stronger communities, then we need those people to slowly come over. So, hopefully videos like that, short bursts of interesting information will aid that process a little bit.
That's right. Your YouTube videos are getting thousands, like when you put them up. So it's you got to think
decent.
It's really decent, and that's just one channel. You're doing heaps of channels. How much does that add up to on all your channels? You know, and so you got to think that, you know, what you're doing is it's like you know, you're living here on planet Earth and you're doing your day job and everything, but you're doing this, you know? And it's like, it's...
Yeah, hopefully it just causes ripples. You know, ripples in the water. And I do kind of spot that, especially with what's going on. Like the first one that obviously blew up and kind of put the channel on the map.
The injuries.
That caused ripples, you know, that suddenly Twitter was blowing
up. Now you're seeing it on the mainstream, aren't you? Like people talking about the sports injuries and screaming about it, and it's on like Fox News and everywhere now. It's like really big.
And like at the time, it just sort of needed someone to sort of piece it all together and show that it wasn't all in our heads and crazy. And, you know, it was just sort of laying it out. So I think that was really useful to kind of go, you know, like I was saying earlier, you're not crazy. It's like, this is a real thing. So start tackling it, you know.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Good work. Good work, buddy. We will plug in again, hopefully, if you can, at the around this time in August, to talk about your latest work, because there's going to be so much more. I know our listeners absolutely love it, and you share it on your channels, and we've had great responses from the podcasts, and you sharing it on your end as well. Once a month, plugging in just really gives us time and looking at all your content you're putting out to do what basically we've done tonight and cover everything. There's so much happening in a week and a month. It's unbelievable. And, you know, as human beings, it's great to have that conversation and just talk about things, you know. And I'm still amazed. I think it's great that we can sit up here in real alternative media and just talk, you know, and talk about what we want to without worrying about what people think or any censorship or anything. Just be ourselves. And it's great. And I always reach out to anyone who wants to come on and have a chat with me. Just email me if you have something important you want to talk about. Come on and we'll do a podcast. That's what I'm doing now. You know, after years and years of podcasting, I want to just reconnect with everybody and talk. That's all, you know. And
I'll send you an email with a couple of things we've brought up in this conversation. You might want to reach out to them to get them on, especially the Matrix.
Absolutely. So, I'm really interested in that, because I've been blabbing about it. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that sparked my interest, because I knew that, and that really interests me very much. And if there's any other links or anything you want me to add into the podcast description, anything you want to finish on tonight?
Not really. Yeah, just thanks again for having me on. Really appreciate it. It's good to have an outlet, a bit of a cathartic process, have a bit of a rant once a month. So yeah, that suits me down to the ground. And if people want to check out the videos, just type in Jay Wilderness, all one word, and you'll probably find it. I think, you know, like you say, I'm on a lot of different channels and stuff. So yeah, it shouldn't be too hard to find.
I'll put all those links up.
Well, that might be on YouTube, but, you know.
I'll put all the links up, and folks can shout you a cup of coffee and help you to keep going, which is, you know, you're doing a lot of work in it. And it's, you know, it takes a lot out of us, and it's great to have support out there. And folks tuning in and listening and supporting in any way they can, it's really good. Great work, buddy. We'll chat again on the next one.
Thank you. For sure. Thanks again, Adam. Take it easy, and talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy. All good. Peace. We're done.